Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. It is your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And today we have Maz with us. So Maz, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you. I'm honored to be here today. I am Maz Alexander. And yes, I wear many hats, but ultimately I am a mental well-being coach, a social worker for adults with mental health problems by background. I'm a mother, I'm an author, and I do many other things. I'm a clown, professional clown as well, amongst other things. And I'm just here to share my story with you guys today.
I'm so excited to have you here today. I found out just now that was still sister's same birthday. Yes, I love it. So let's kick it right off with my first question. How would you describe survival mode?
Yeah, well, survival mode is a place that I've been trying to escape from for the longest time. It's a place whereby, for me, where I'd been on autopilot for many years, not realizing that I was operating in dysfunction, because that dysfunction was disguised as tradition under culture. It was a place where, yeah, disguised as resilience, but really I was kind of drowning. And although I was functioning, doing all the things, going to work, raising your children, all of that, it's a place that often, I'd call it a wilderness place where no one can see you. Just like with drowning, sometimes people don't see you and you can easily go under. And, you know, it's just a place of, it's barrenness, it's dry. And I was pretty much burnt out in that space. So survival mode can actually be familiar and be your comfort zone, as it was for me. And it's just a place of, because you see, the thing is, it wasn't always awful. It just becomes so familiar. So for me, survival mode was just the embodiment of all the dysfunction, all the pressures that were placed on me. So yeah.
You know, the one word that I hear almost every guest say is autopilot. Like, it really is that, you know, just showing up every day and doing the things that we need to do. But it's the absence of executive control, really. It's just going with the flow and doing the best that you can. So, Mav, tell us your story to and through survival mode.
Yeah, well, I feel like since I entered this world, I've been in survival mode. I was raised in survival mode. So there were a number of adverse kind of childhood experiences. So I was born to a mother and a father who didn't want me. So I had this, always had this orphan thing going on. Certainly I was a psychological orphan. And my mother is part of the, you know, the Windrush generation. You're familiar with that, Letitia? I know you are. And my father's identity, I wasn't raised with him. Don't know where he is. If you see him, let me know. So it was a single parent household. The other siblings had gone because I was the baby. And I know that being part of that generation, my mother had to work very hard. She certainly provided for me. You know, I had all the, yeah, I was clothed. I grew up in a middle class home. However, it wasn't all roses. Every friend of the family seemed to be a pervert. So there was some sexual abuse that went on. And yeah, for a good few years. And there was this one friend of the family who everybody liked because he was quite wealthy. And he seemed like a nice guy to the outside. And that went on for a while. And I remember telling my mother, she didn't believe me. I was sent away, that I was told I was going on holiday, basically. And, you know, I was sent to Jamaica. It's usually the reverse, isn't it? I was said, you're going on holiday to Jamaica. And, you know, that was traumatic in itself, because after a few weeks, I realized I wasn't coming back. And I was left with, I didn't even know the woman. I don't think my mother even knew her. There was just this woman who was paid to look after me. I didn't know her from Adam. And again, the sexual abuse continued because her son took an interest in me. You know, I was, these were my, you know, how old was I? Maybe 8, 9. He was in his late 20s, something like that. And it was, you know, it was terrible. And I was out there for 2 years, at least 2 years. My mom would send money. The woman wouldn't feed me. Anyway, long story short, I went to say I have my grandparents live over the other side of the island. So I went to stay with them. I had some fond memories there, but it was hard, as you know, Caribbean life. But them times was in the 80s. It was hard. It was, you know, and I was going to school and, you know, they used to beat you with a big sugar cane. But yeah, that was all pretty much standard. And then I came back to England and finished off my schooling there. But what I didn't realize only as an adult was that, and I don't say this lightly, my mother had narcissistic personality disorder. And I'm not saying that because I know people use this word. I've said that before. And people say, don't say that. Don't say that. But it's true. It's no exaggeration. And because I myself working in mental health and, you know, looking at the diagnosis, and we always wondered, you know, myself, my siblings, other family members, because at first I thought it must be me. Maybe I was, you know, unruly. But she seemed to have a struggle with her relationships with others. And it just wasn't right. We always thought that's not normal. So anyway, there were a few things which in retrospect, I realized there was, you know, she was competing with me. She wasn't able to love me. Now, I put that down to her being from the Windrush generation. No, it wasn't so much to do with that, although she had her own traumas. But yeah, my whole life was lived as, you know, well, I had to suffer, so therefore you suffer. You're not going to have anything nice. I'm going to make sure you don't go to university. I'm going to make sure. You know, even with my first husband, I sound like I've had many husbands, I only had one. My husband at the time, she would try and break us up and say, you know, Maz was with somebody else last night. And he was like, but I was with her. What are you talking about? She'd always try and ruin events, birthdays, all of that. Lots of gaslighting. But anyway, there was all of this realization, because it was hard for me to come to terms with not being wanted. But, you know, from the outset, I was frequently told that we should have aborted you. We never wanted you. And this was just, you know, Letitia, for me, you know, if I asked, it's like, can I have a bit more chicken or something? That's the response I would get. Or if you disagree with her, you're a whore. Everybody's a whore, or you're Satan. So that was it up until my 20s. And I think that kind of was the foundation for a lot of unhealthy relationships with others that I had, you know, looking for love in the wrong places. Like I said, my husband, at some, I thought he was going to be my knight in shining armor. He was a bit older, but I ended up being the provider, the nurturer, and, you know, the ones that, you know, it just didn't work out as I thought. I had my daughter not long after the marriage, but I became a single mother effectively even throughout the marriage because of the immigration difficulties. He was there and I was flying back and forth to Jamaica. And one other, there's been many, but I won't go too much with the detail, but there were other factors as well. So even after that, and I had a separation from my husband, I was focused on raising my daughter. She's grown up now. I inadvertently joined a cult. That was about 15 years ago. I joined a cult. I tell you, I didn't know it was a cult. It was masquerading as a Pentecostal church. And that's why I experienced some spiritual abuse. I didn't even know that was a thing. I'll talk more about that later. But yeah, I was trying to get my life on track. Obviously, I was looking. You know, they did the whole love bombing thing. They were lovely people, and they seemed to be. They were just very misguided. And all of that, this, because I was a people pleaser, and, you know, that led me to working in toxic environments, you know. I tell you one thing, Letitia, working in the caring professions, you'd think that people are in that industry because they care. I tell you, I've met a few psychopaths in the, you know, in the top positions. I'm like, what is this? And it was an eye opener. So yeah, I had to leave some toxic relationships and some toxic work environments because it was just keeping me stuck in survival mode. So yeah.
So, you know, whenever I talk to Black women, there is this commonality between us all due to tradition and culture. But I think, particularly with the West Indian influence, there is this coldness with women. It's very icy, especially, you know, those older generations. And I think, you know, Black British women experience things different. African American women experience things differently. As I too have that West Indian influence, I really do understand how much that culture influences the way that we show up and the way that we experience the world. So, you know, I'm curious to hear, what was the journey out for you? Like, what was perhaps your aha moment? What perhaps was, you know, that defining decision that, you know, I need to move beyond this experience?
Yeah, it was a gradual process, because, you know, like I said earlier, you can be in the dysfunction, and because it's so familiar to you, you assume everyone's like that. You normalize these kind of traumatic experiences. But for me, I know that for years there was a lingering sadness. Let's call it melancholy. It wasn't clinical depression, but I used to have these waves of deep despair, despite my success, because I achieved a lot, still am achieving a lot in my life. But initially I was suppressing my emotions. I was surprised about the anger, because sadness, yes, you can deal with, but the anger, so much anger in me, because I had this disenfranchised grief. You know, I wasn't allowed to have it. And it was a case of, like I said, normalizing it. This is what all Caribbean households were like. That's what I was told. And you get a few licks, just take the licks. Even my own mother would give this, you know, if you're with a man, imagine giving advice. If you're with a man, it's all right. Just marry yourself a rich man. And if he beats you, just take it. If he cheats on you, that's okay. You just have to put up with these things. Because, of course, that's what she had been taught. But yeah, it was when I started to, I wasn't myself. I used to be carefree and all of these things. And I just wasn't myself, and I wasn't firing on all cylinders. So there was this anxiety that also came. I never used to have that. But yeah, it was always, I began to always be ruminating, catastrophizing, fearing the worst. My nervous system was really shot to pieces. It was really dysregulated. So that's when I started to realize, no, something not right with me. It's not, you know, being in this constant state of, you know, the fight, flight, freeze, spawn. So I developed some unhelpful coping strategies, which involved drinking. So still love a rum, by the way. Love a rum. Yeah, but it was alcohol was my choice. I struggled with basic things. So for all the success I had, basic things like decision making, the smallest of things, I'd always have to check. Was that, is it okay? Because I wasn't allowed, certainly in growing up, couldn't have that. The church taught me that. And it was when I, you know, you go for health checkups. It was when some symptoms, you know, I had insomnia for years anyway, but I remember going to the dentist. They said, are you okay? Do you have a stressful job? And at the time I did, but I wasn't aware that I was grinding my teeth. And they were telling me, oh, do you want to put on a mouth guard? I was like, mouth guard? What am I doing? Like, am I doing 10 rounds with Mike Tyson in the ring? You know, I was like, what? I was surprised. I wasn't aware. There's tension in the shoulders. I shallow breathing, all of these things. So yeah, I thought, you know what? Something needs to be done. And it was, again, like I said to you, the spiritual wilderness. And through my faith, I have a Christian faith. So in this season, I think God was showing me, basically, don't rely on what that person says or what have you, because I'd always go to church and want to hear a word. What this prophet saying, whatever. Taught me about grace. And the exit came for me. That was the beginning of the exit, by the way, Letitia. So I believe that there is a plan and purpose for all of us, but I believed it for myself that, oh yeah, I am here for a reason. And I always felt like I was destined for more, even though I felt like complete rubbish. I thought there's more. There's got to be more. So I started caring about myself, because before I didn't, I always felt unworthy. And that what that looked like in, I guess, the last 10 years was going, you know, I used to be a lot bigger, you know, emotional eating, all of that. But I went on a weight loss journey and I started to pursue my own dreams. I had dreams and goals. So through prayer, I'd say I had therapy, although therapy wasn't always helpful. You know, Letitia, sometimes they re-traumatize me. So when I'm talking about things like, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, even the sexual abuse. I went to he was a nice man, but he did, I think he found me quite complex. And he'd say things, oh, well, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of women wore short skirts and, you know, that's how it was, you know, because men look. And I was like, what? Did you hear what I just said? What are you talking about? You know, he was kind of minimizing my pain there. But anyway, ultimately, I had to accept myself. So this was a process. It took years. So self-acceptance and the boundaries. I didn't know I didn't have boundaries, but I certainly do now. And especially with family members. So I began to seek safe spaces and be around people who understood. All of that self-care journey is still ongoing, because now it looks a bit different. So although I'm a coach, I have a coach. I love traveling. Traveling has been the thing for me, because I learn more about myself. I love to solo travel. I've been to 8 countries in the last year alone. And I think as well, the catalyst for change, Leticia, was, again, working in the industry that I did, and especially at the time of the pandemic, everybody was, not everybody, but, you know, people just dropping dead. And I was like, even friends, it wasn't just because of the pandemic, but lost friends to cancer, several bereavements. And I said, you know what? These people all died. They had plans. And I have plans, and I'm here procrastinating. I need to live out my dreams before it's too late. So that's what I did. And as I said to you, I've always been creative. So I love being on the stage. I said I was a professional clown. So I do stand-up comedy. I actually talk about some of my traumas on there, and I find it really sort of cathartic. So the one thing that I learned in all of this is that I have to remind myself still that my healing is certainly ongoing. So I'm still unlearning all the nonsense. So, you know, it's been 40 odd years of that being programmed. And yeah, I'm unlearning those things. So yeah, it's a process.
It's a process. And as you were talking, I mean, the audience probably won't see me, but I was nodding because I can relate to so much that you talked about, right? Like, I had a narcissistic father. He basically took my birth was the reason why his marriage fell apart to my mother. I lived with that narrative for a very long time. It made me despise my mother, actually. And then in my 30s, I finally said to her, like, why did you and my daddy get a divorce? And she was like, cheated, that's why. I was like, what? And I told her what he had said to me. And it's interesting because he later came to live with me after I moved out here to England. And his narrative is still exactly the same. He one night had a few drinks and had told my boyfriend at the time that, yeah, you know, she was born, and then her mama just stopped caring about me.
Oh, wow.
40 years later, that was his narrative. And, you know, also in relation to the church, there are a lot of cults that masquerade as churches and as places of healing or support, when really it's just a form of control. And I won't take away anybody's personal experience with good religious places. However, a lot of them unfortunately do a lot of damage in the name of God. Mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of chastisement in a Pentecostal church as well. So when you said it, I actually kind of lit up because it was like two extremes. My granny used to go to an AME church, and then my mom went to a Pentecostal church. And even as a very young child, experiencing the difference between the two, I often asked my mama, I was just like, I feel like they're trying to control us. Like, I don't understand the difference between the two. So much that I can go on and on and on about, but very interestingly enough, I think what you said, particularly around acceptance, is so key. So many of us are not in a place of acceptance, and the reason for that is there is this misconception that acceptance means condonement, which creates this resistance for people to actually embrace life in its fullness. Because if I say I accept this, it means I condone the sexual abuse, I condone the way that my mother treated me, I condone, you know, all of the other stuff that I went through. And it's not that. It's just, it's almost this act of freedom where those things no longer have control over us. over us. Once we can get to a point of acceptance, and a huge part of my journey was being able to accept my flaws, because I had heard for so long that, you know, you're too much, you got too much attitude, like that mouth, you know. I was too much for everybody that I encountered back home from birth, from childhood, and right through the school system. That's all I heard. And once I got to a point of acceptance, I then used that too muchness, because it was given to me for a reason. That it allowed me to have a voice, right? It allowed me to show up in these spaces as I do now and express myself and have no problem with expressing my opinion and being disruptive in this space, because I recognize it serves a purpose. There are people, and especially with West Indians, they live and die by a child should be seen and not heard, right? Like, you can't step out of line. I mean, you talked about caning in school and, like, you know, that sugar cane used to come out with. Then you stepped out of line, which then becomes our narrative as we grow up, right? We struggle with advocating for ourselves because it's literally been beaten out of us. We struggle with owning our story because it's often attached to shame and guilt. And it stunts our growth.
Fully agree. Yes. Yeah. All of that. And again, that's what keeps us in survival mode. Because ultimately, yeah, you see how we've been conditioned. We've been conditioned. Just society as a whole, you know, we as women, you know, we're taught not to have boundaries, really, especially in our community. Share, it's right to share, but share, or, you know, even from being smoking, okay, Uncle Henry or whoever's going, give him a kiss, why have I got to kiss him or hug him? No, thank you. You know, we're taught that, you know, your bodies are not your own, you're everything. And things play into that. And like you say, And I want to tell you about some of the things that came up for me during this journey as well, because, yeah, I became a social worker because I wanted to affect change. And the work that you and I do, Letitia, you know, whether you're a coach, whether you're a reverend or whatever kind of healer you may be, often we get into this work because they call us the wounded soldiers or wounded warriors. That often there is, because, you know, there is a reason, a catalyst for us to be in this kind of atmosphere. And we can be great. I certainly was advocating for others who have similar experiences. Wasn't so good at advocating for myself, but I soon had to, because it was just me. And you get that hyper independence, which I am unlearning, by the way, and learning to embrace. And ask for what I need. But more importantly, and all that you just said there, Letitia, is the generational cycles and the generational traumas that can be repeated. And I definitely, especially after having children, I did not want that, like, to be my legacy, to be her legacy. No, because that is an unfortunate legacy that my mother, my grandmother left. My grandmother was descended from slaves, by the way. She died when she was 108. And I know she had a harsh time. She was in the Caribbean and she was unloved. All of these things, they repeat. And I know that everything that I've gone through is what they faced. But the problem that we have is because people keep things, you know, these family secrets that only might come out at Christmas or a funeral when somebody want to cuss somebody and then it comes out like that. And, you know, every funeral I go to, Letitia, I'm like, who's that? Oh, that's your sister. That's you. I'm like, what? Come on, you know, we got to do better. And also with the religious element. So they were twisting scriptures, for example, to keep me in a place of subjugation. Now, I don't doubt that they thought they were doing the right thing, but it was wrong biblically and on all levels. And we need to call things what they are. So this dismissiveness that even now still get, oh, well, you know, it was like that back then. You know, a lot of people say that. Well, you know, sometimes it was like that. And no. What we're talking about are crimes. It's illegal. What you were doing was illegal. I'm not just talking about the beating when we're talking about sexual abuse, when we're talking about control and coercion. No, you cannot do that. And it's not acceptable, whether you want to tell me Bible or not. And I want to point out, because this is the thing about the faith. So there's a bit of a dichotomy that I had. Forgiveness is important. You could choose to forgive or not to forgive. Forgiveness is important. But what the church tend to do is deny people that time often to process what's happened to them. Well, you know, it's really difficult to tell somebody after they've been through, whatever the trauma was. Oh, you just have to forget.
Forget.
Yeah, nonsense. And it's like you've been at a funeral. The woman's, I've even heard people say this. You lost your husband and somebody said, oh, don't worry. The man's just going down into the ground. Don't worry, you'll find a new husband. You'll find a, what? Well, no, she might find a new husband, but that's not what she needs to hear in her grief. What are you talking about? And my thing is, Leticia, that we, not just in the church, society as a whole, we offer empty platitudes to people. Sometimes we don't know what to say to someone in their pain. Better you say nothing at all, because we have this culture of toxic positivity that actually enables a lot of abusers. We tell women, oh, well, he's your husband, but he's your husband and he cares and he's just checking on you. Oh, everybody goes through a bit of struggle, love. And it's like, no, honey, he might kill you because he threw you down the stairs last week. Why are you telling people things like this? So for me, and you touched on this before, Leticia, I realized that the fact that we notice it, other people notice it. We want to do something about it. You're a disruptor, yeah? We want to disrupt those things that cause us to exist in survival mode. And I realized as a black sheep, I was a black sheep from day. I was that child, just like you. I would point out things. I was inquisitive. I was the child that was standing in the mirror saying, who am I? I was always very philosophical and I had questions. I'd always point things out. And even my mom said, you know too much. I can't beat you. You know too much. I even used to tell my mom when her partners are like, mom, he's cheating on you. That guy, I was a detective. I'd follow them. She went, shut your mouth. Shut up. Know your place. Don't that. You know what I mean? And I've been, I was always like, let me, because I never took things just on face value. So what I realized ultimately is, yeah, as a black sheep, even wrote a book about it, because we're not meant to fit in. If you're the one who is realizing, a bit like the to use an example, Moses, when he saw the burning bush, it wasn't unusual for to be in the wilderness and something catch fire. If you notice it and you're curious about it for long enough, You begin to ask questions, don't you? You begin to investigate. And that's ultimately what we were here to do, what we were designed to do. And, help others disrupt those cultural expectations. And also that harmful one, the most harmful one of all, the alpha female, the black, strong black woman. I never subscribed to that because, but why can't strong look like asking for help, Why are we? I'm tired of hearing that rhetoric, especially amongst my Caribbean people. Oh, but that's how we are. We can just take it and we're not like, the other. And we compare our traumas, and I'm like, that's ridiculous. Because remember, I work in mental health. Who's overrepresented in the system? Criminal justice in the psychiatric system. And whenever I ask people, how did you get here? Just the Babylon.
You actually said it. I just laughed because yes, that's exactly what it is. It's like I'm hard done by this system that has been created to hold us down, and you should get it because I mean, come on, so much of my healing has been rewriting the cultural expectations and the traditions that I learned, and I honor my grandmother who recently passed. I watched her strength. But there was this absence of context for me. I've often said to my mom, I was like, I understand that you are my mother, but I want to get to know you as a human, right? Like I'm not a child anymore. I am an adult. I am a grown woman. I want to get to know who you are. And it's still very far removed. I think after my granny died, she opened up a little bit more about telling me more things about, you know, what her childhood looked like and, you know, certain situations. But that was something that I've always wanted, because I feel like the more I've understood my granny, who was, I mean, when I say ice cold when I was growing up, like it was like, I used to have friends. I used to have friends that were like, oh, my granny is the sweetest woman alive. And I'm like, you know, and it wasn't until I got to be an adult that I actually saw the sweetness in her. And she was the sweetest lady around. But growing up, I was not allowed to see that because it was, I'm the disciplinarian. Point blank, period. There was no smiling. There wasn't this, you know, softness that we see perhaps in, you know, the Caucasian families, right? There, I never saw softness in my granny until, again, I was an adult. But then as I got to know more about her journey and recognize, wow, like this lady went through so much. She was operating from trauma responses. She did the best that she could do. She then passed on that armor to her children, and she had five amazingly strong daughters, including two sons. But my aunties and my mama, they are a force to be reckoned with in their own rights, right? Like my mom and two of her sisters are Guinness Book World Record holders, and like the fortitude that my granny instilled in them, I appreciate, because it was then later passed on to me. But I often wonder, what if my granny was able to deal with her trauma? What if it looked different for her? Would my relationship with my mother have been different? Would my relationship with her have been different? And how would that have shaped me differently? Because that's what I wanted. That's what I needed. So I really do appreciate the examination of tradition and culture and how we end up, like you said, I was born into survival mode, right? Like we end up in this space, and because we see our mom and our grandma in that space, we often think that that's what's normal. And it's important for us to learn how to rewrite that in a way that gives future generations the opportunity to thrive in a different way. So Maz, tell us a bit more about how we can find you online and the work that you do.
Yes. Now, don't stalk me. you can, even if you type in my name, Maz Alexander, in Google, it'll come up. But you can find me on LinkedIn. That's mainly where I hang out. And on Instagram is Maz Transformational Coaching. So, yeah, feel free to connect with me. That would be great. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this conversation, especially since I can relate to so much of what you said. So before we wrap it all up, one key takeaway for the audience to action.
Ah, right. Oh, there's so many. But okay, one, ultimately, I just want to say to your listeners that please do not suffer in silence. I want you to know that you are worthy despite your circumstances. So ultimately, please give yourself permission, you know, because the truth is, if we were all keeping it real, you'd see that none of us really have it all together. And all those shameful stories, if we could share them, we'd all probably say, yeah, me too. That happened to me. So please don't suffer in silence. Our bodies, our minds were not designed to hold these kind of burdens. And I'll just say that I have written about this in my first book, Arise Kintsugi Queen, and it's a Kintsugi principle. You know, Leticia, you may have seen it. It's a Japanese art form where, you know, if you break pottery, you put it together again with that gold glue. Mm-hmm. Well, just a metaphor for life, that You know, the same way if I give you a £50 note, you drop it in the toilet, that money can still spend, isn't it? I would fish it out the toilet and wipe it off. You spend it. So yeah, it doesn't disqualify you, your traumas, everything you've been through. Just please don't suffer in silence. That's all.
Absolutely. And you know, audience, the reason why I lead with storytelling in this podcast is because I want you to be able to identify the commonalities in your story with others and anchor into the fact that healing is possible for you. So Mayors, thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. And audience, I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Leticia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth. You're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.